Hello everyone and welcome to your Linux and open source news show. I'm your host Nick and this is a podcast where we discuss everything related to Linux, open source, the open web and privacy. This week we've got Facebook banning links to the Fediverse, specifically to PixelFed, their Instagram competitor, even though it's really way smaller than any Instagram or Facebook platform. We also have a giant Valve interview on SteamOS, Steam machines, anti-cheat, third-party devices, how everything works on that regard. And we've got Apple pulling their AI since it was so bad that it just became completely unacceptable. We also have the release of Mint 22.1. We've got some news about Fedora 42, some news about GNOME 48, and a lot more. So, as always, if you want to dive deeper into any of these topics, all the links that I use to put this show together are in the show notes. All the links to support the show and the channel are also in the show notes. Do check them out if you want this podcast to continue. And to keep this show going, we also have our sponsor, Tuxedo Computers. They make desktops and laptops that ship with Linux pre-installed. All the components inside and all the hardware is picked specifically because it runs really well under Linux, and they actually develop some additional drivers and tools to ensure that everything works really well. They have a big range of computers, from laptops, desktops, something for office work, for gaming, some workstations, anything you might imagine, with a lot of customization options on the hardware, on the keyboard layouts, on the logos you want displayed. Everything is really, really customizable. I only use Tuxedo Computers these days. Everything I do related to a podcast, to the channel, to video editing, publishing, anything is done on one of their laptops, and all my gaming needs are done on one of their desktops. So if you need a new computer, you want to run Linux on it, and you want to make sure that your money goes towards a company that actively contributes to Linux, click the link in the description and check out Tuxedo Computers. They're all I use and they're really, really good. They've been supporting me for more than 3 years and there's a reason why they're still my sponsor. Okay, so let's begin with Valve. Pierre-Loup Griffet, Valve's principal engineer on SteamOS and Proton, talked at CES about SteamOS and the Steam Deck. And there are some interesting things in there. So the interview was given in French, so I will show auto-translated parts of it right here, so forgive me if they are not really written in Shakespeare English, it's Google Translate. First, the reason why SteamOS was not released earlier, and still isn't, even though it's coming this year, is because of drivers. Apparently, Intel drivers, presumably on the GPU and integrated GPU side of things, but also mostly Nvidia drivers, were not up to snuff for Valve to feel like they could just package all of that and ship it for everyone to enjoy. There was also the installer issue, where it just takes time to provide all the installation options that people expect from a Linux distro. It just was not a priority before, because SteamOS just was flashed in the factory on Steam Decks, and that was it. Pierre-Loup also talked about other gaming distros like Nobara, Chimera OS, and others, and he said that these provide valuable work in terms of shipping a unified product that amalgamates work from various other developers. He also said that SteamOS will use things developed by the community. For example, they use Input Plumber for the Lenovo Legion Go S to actively and rightly map the controls. As he says, they are not that interested in reinventing the wheel. They would much rather prefer use something that exists, provided that this thing meets their standards. On the Lenovo Legion Go S, he also said that it's Lenovo who approached them because they wanted to offer a better software experience. And as per how SteamOS will be distributed and updated on that device and other third-party devices, Pierre-Loup said that Valve prefers having control over the drivers themselves, to be able to fix issues in the games without having to wait for a specific developer to support the game on their platform. But everything related to the BIOS and to the firmware will be provided by the manufacturer of the device and distributed through SteamOS. So BIOS and firmware for the Lenovo Legion Go S will be provided by Lenovo, but all the driver updates of SteamOS for that device will be provided by Valve. Valve apparently has 4 developers working on the open source NVIDIA drivers. He didn't mention if it was the official modules or NVK and Nuvo. I would guess it's the latter. He also said that they started working on AMD drivers in 2017, so it took them a while to get things to a status where they were comfortable with the performance, and presumably it took them the same amount of time to get Nuvo and NVK, or even the Intel drivers if they started contributed to that, to an acceptable state. Finally, on SteamOS, he said that the goal was not to outcompete Windows or to gain all the market share. It's to have a different system with different priorities and a different experience. The goal is not to woo away every Windows user if they're happy on Windows, which I think is sound. As per Steam Machines, Pierre Lou said that handhelds are the priority right now, not home consoles, but they might open that door in the future. He concluded on anti-cheat, and he said that developers don't just forget to tick a checkbox. It's more work than that. It's more that they don't want to provide the ongoing support for the platform to make sure that the anti-cheat keeps doing its job even on SteamOS. Pierre Lou also seemed confident that things will get better with time, saying that the types of games relying heavily on anti-cheat are generally shooters or competitive games that are not necessarily the best games to be played on a handheld. But he also said that if the user base increases, game developers might just allocate more time to the platform, and he concluded saying he really was not worried about this going in the future. Now that was a very interesting thing to read, if you can forgive the haphazard translation that Google Translate gave of the webpage. It shows that Valve is still very pragmatic about things. They don't have a 10-year-long plan, or at least they are not communicating it. They're just moving towards a certain goal, which is let's provide a good experience and good hardware. And if people start biting, then we can improve the experience more and more and build a bigger team. They're not functioning as a startup trying to build a specific team to take on Windows. They're just doing their thing, and if it works, it will grow, and if it doesn't work, it will stagnate or be deleted, and that's about it. I think it's a sound approach. It also shows that they're not necessarily focused on helping Linux gaming, for example, through anti-cheat. They are more focused on helping handheld and SteamOS gaming, which is not always exactly the same thing. Now, apparently, Meta is now banning links to PixelFed posted on Instagram. They're marking them as spam. If you don't know about it, PixelFed is a Fediverse service. It's an alternative social network to Instagram, much like Mastodon is the open source, decentralized alternative to Twitter or X or whatever you want to call that hellhole. PixelFed is the same kind of alternative to Instagram. Zuckerberg recently announced that they would relax all the moderation and fact-checking rules, at least in the US. They don't seem too keen on doing that in the EU because they know they would get banned instantly, and they apparently don't want to let go of that revenue. So it's free speech, but only for US citizens because, yeah, they prefer money to actual free speech, I think. Now, these moderation and rules that they're going to change include some very overt anti-LGBTQ stances, and apparently led a lot of people to leaving Instagram and moving to PixelFed. It's apparently an unprecedented level of traffic. And thus, Meta started blocking links to that platform, which is insane, because even with huge levels of traffic, let's be honest, it will never compete with Instagram. It can't. It's not VC funded. They actively refuse VC funding, so it cannot grow through ads or giant development sprints. It cannot really communicate its existence to a lot of people and draw people to the service. And I highly doubt that the exodus towards PixelFed is massive enough to have any impact on Meta's bottom line. So on the one hand, you have Meta saying that they want less of what they call censorship, but that's actually removing harmful information that is blatantly untrue. And on the other hand, they're just censoring links. At any rate, no matter where you fall on that issue, I'm on PixelFed. If you want to try it out, you can follow me at thelinuxexp at pixelfed.social. Social media has never been for the good or even the betterment of humanity. It's always been pretty crap, But the Fediverse services are really the only ones that I'll use, because while they don't enrich my life in any way, they're actually not actively evil, which is more than what I can say for big, well-known social networks these days. And still on the topic of PixelFed, they have their official app out. Previously, you could download a testing build to try it out, but the first stable versions are now available on iOS and Android. Apparently, this release led to a huge surge in the number of users, but it's still a very small platform. They apparently only have 78,000 posts in total on the platform, which also means that Meta blocking traffic to it is actually ridiculous, because it might as well not exist as a platform. It's just really niche and small. It makes no sense. But hopefully PixelFed can grow to become as strong as Mastodon, and it can be a real solid platform for people who want to share some pictures, but also escape the centralized, billionaire-controlled internet. As I said, you can follow me there. I won't post a lot, so you're not gonna get spammed, and it's just like pictures that I take during my walks or stuff that I paint for my Warhammer army, so if you don't want to see that, that's totally understandable. I don't even want to see my own pictures. Now, it turns out Apple's AI features were so bad that they already pulled them out of every iPhone that got them. It's only temporary, of course, they're gonna bring them back, but it's a strong indication that the stuff just was not ready for primetime deployment. At least, not Apple's implementation of it. The feature specifically tended to create completely misleading and false notifications out of various headlines from news outlets and out of the messages users received. Apple thus disabled the features in a software update, but obviously they will re-enable them later. The thing generated a lot of complaints from the BBC and other news outlets because the feature created notifications that stated these outlets said something when they really never said that. The AI just misread or misinterpreted the actual headlines and summarized it in a way that was completely and factually inaccurate. Of course, this isn't just Apple's problem. Every AI vendor has the exact same issue to deal with. A large language model has no concept of truth. It doesn't know if what it's telling you is true or not. They're not trained this way. There is no truth parameter, and you can manipulate an AI to tell you anything you want, whether it contradicts something that they've said before or not, and if they contradict themselves and you remark on it, they're going to invent a lie to justify why they lied. This will not be fixed in the current way of doing LLMs, and it is the major problem affecting AI right now, because you're giving people a tool that answers their questions without them having to do any research, but the information you're giving them is factually incorrect a lot of the time, and thus cannot be trusted most of the time. I recently heard someone, I can't quite remember, who called AI devil tech, and it made me laugh. It made me think of people shying away from oxen dragging a plow through a field, but also the description is kind of accurate. Like, right now, the net result of having AI in our lives is a net negative, a big, big net negative compared to what it brings. And honestly, there's no sign of improvement. Everything that gets released is worse than the previous iteration. So yeah. Now, on to less dire topics. Linux Mint 22.1 is now released. I already have a video on my YouTube channel showing all the new features. Go check that out if you plan on upgrading or on switching to Mint. What you have to know is that it offers the Cinnamon Desktop 6.4, it's still based on Ubuntu 24.04 LTS, and it runs the kernel 6.8. The headline features are a new default theme for Cinnamon, better dialogues for the Cinnamon shell, and a much better Wayland session, although it's still not the default and it's still not finished because, for example, you can't switch keyboard layouts. You also get power modes on laptops, meaning you can go to power saver, balanced, and stuff like that. Finally, you also have a nightlight feature that works straight from the distro settings and also supports Wayland. Notifications can now appear above full screen windows. The Alt Tab switcher places minimized windows at the end of the list. You can show the password that you're typing on the lock screen, and you can bind Nemo actions to keyboard shortcuts. They also improve the default Mint Y theme with rounded corners, better contrast, and they also modernized the entire apt-based or Debian packages-based stack relying on Mint's own tools, meaning that you should have better translated stuff, fewer bugs when handling packages and updates, and for Mint developers, it means a much simpler architecture for all of their graphical tools which they rebuilt with those new libraries, which means better performance, simpler development, and generally just a good experience if you like Deb packages. Go check out my video, but I'm glad to see. If you want to know more, go check out my video. It's like right there on my channel. It's the one I made just before this one. And honestly, I think it's good to have one more consumer-facing distro working on Debian packages and all the underlying tools, graphical or not, that work with them. This stack works, but it's old, it's crummy, and it's got plenty of dependency problems. If Mint can fix all of that, I think it's gonna be for the best for everyone. Now, the Fedora KDE spin is now an official Fedora edition, and thus it had to receive its own promotion and promotional pages that are on the same level as the standard GNOME edition. And this is in progress, with a specific strategy taking shape to talk about this specific KDE edition. Apparently, they want to push it towards multimedia enthusiasts like gamers and audio and video users, notably promoting variable refresh rate support and support for DRM leasing under Wayland, meaning KDE right now is probably one of the best options for gamers generally. Those options do exist in GNOME, but in experimental fashion. They also will push the KDE edition towards content creators. KDE has a very nice suite of tools for people who like to create, with Krita or Krita, however you want to pronounce that, Kdenlive to create videos, and they also potentially have OBS, even though it's not a KDE app, it's a Qt app, so I don't really know why they included that one in the list. Accessibility is also a focus that they want to push towards, and of course customization and personalization, because that's KDE's strong suit. It's like the most customizable desktop there is, probably on every operating system. Now, this direction for the promotion is still in discussion on the Fedora community, and it's probably going to evolve, but since Fedora 42 will be the Fedora version where the KDE spin is put on the same level as the GNOME edition, I guess they will need to move fast before the end of April to complete those promotional pages and material. It's good to have this KDE spin promoted to full edition status because we currently kind of lack good, solid, dependable, non-rolling release distros that ship with KDE. You have KDE Neon, but it's really not that well tested. Not enough people contribute to it or test it. It's just not stable. It doesn't work well. You've got TuxedoOS, which I use and love, but it's based on an LTS, so some people will just not enjoy the older base. You've got Kubuntu, but this is Ubuntu underneath, so lots of snaps everywhere, which is not to everyone's liking. With Fedora KDE, you'll get the vanilla KDE version with the Fedora base, which is generally pretty modern and updated often. So I think it's good to have that handy for people who need like just a little extra more new stuff than TuxedoOS, but without going to a rolling release entirely. And still on Fedora 42, they are now proposing to allow package maintainers to provide optimized executables for certain x86 feature levels, so more modern CPUs. They already support that for libraries, but now this would be for every binary that is in the repos. The package could basically provide an optimized version of the same binary. And at runtime, the program would determine which feature level it can use, and it would thus run the best executable for your current CPU. It would use a little helper to do that. This would check what your CPU can do, and then it would look for a symlink to the specified architecture level in a specific directory and run the right version of the binary for you. The decision to use that feature or not is left to package maintainers. And the people behind this proposal would also provide a few packages to showcase how this works and the performance benefits. This will not require new repos, it will not leave anybody with an older computer behind, which is, in my opinion, the best way of implementing these kind of features. You will be storing multiple versions of the same binary, so you're gonna use a little bit more space. But let's be honest, executables and binaries are not the things that will crowd your hard drive or your SSD. Like the people behind this proposal said, this will not provide you a huge boost in performance for most applications, because the Linux binary format, so ELF, already provides a way for developers to use more modern instruction sets from the x86-64 architecture and just it uses it if it's available, but it doesn't use it if it's not. This is more a way for package maintainers to compile the program with this support if the developers of the app didn't take advantage of it. So it's another extra layer that makes sure that programs that don't currently support that and thus miss out on some performance gains actually do gain support for it, but through the packaging process without having to rewrite some code. You just compile it with certain support. It's going to be interesting. I don't think there's really any drawback from this, so it's probably going to be accepted anyway. We'll see if package maintainers adopt it or not. Now let's talk about GNOME 48. And there's an interesting new thing that is planned. It looks like it's going to get a digital well-being feature, which is all of those things calculating your screen time and telling you to rest your eyes, to move away from the screen and stuff like that. In the latest GNOME Shell 48 Alpha, GNOME can now remind you to take breaks from looking at your screen. You will get notifications to tell you to get away from the computer for a few seconds to relax your eyes or to get up and walk a little bit. And there's also a planned digital well-being page in the GNOME settings with a graph of how long you've used your computer each day and options to set a bedtime schedule. So being told, hey, dude, it's 11 p.m., just go to bed. You can also set your screen time limits. You can set the break notifications that you have to move around, relax your eyes. Of course, everything is optional and you can disable it. On top of that, it looks like GNOME 48 will have a few cool things like improved color management support, fixes to avoid the CPU stalling when using dedicated GPUs from NVIDIA that are attached to external displays. You'll get fixes for touchscreen drag and drop on X Wayland, better cursor scaling, and a few sovereign tech fun projects being shipped as well. Pretty interesting stuff. All of that digital well-being stuff doesn't really apply to me because I'm a very lazy person, and so I tend to always want to do something else than work. So I always get away from the computer when I should be working. So I don't need notifications to remind me of that because it will make me work less and actually not as well. But for a lot of people, that's interesting to have. And also, GNOME 48 looks like it's gonna be packed to the gills with new stuff, which is nice because it's been a few years since GNOME has really pushed something new and interesting onto their users. Now, GNOME 48 is also getting a new default app that will be part of the main desktop experience, provided you're using a distro that ships the default set of applications. It's called Decibel, or well, it's now called Audio, because like with all GNOME programs, they have the good sense of naming them with the function of the app, not with a weird name that no one understands. Although Decibel would probably be pretty understandable by most people. So as you can guess, it is an audio player, something that GNOME really did not have for a while and that distro supplemented with a wide variety of programs. It's a very simple audio player that just plays audio files. It doesn't manage your music, it doesn't create playlists, it doesn't edit tags, it doesn't show album art, it just plays back an audio file. It will display the waveform, it will give you 30 seconds backwards and forward buttons, it will let you change the speed and the volume, and that's it. And before someone starts screaming that it's so weird that GNOME invests time to develop a new player for audio when so many options exist, it's something that has been in development independently and that GNOME looked at, said, hey, you know what? It's good. Would you like this to be included as the default GNOME audio player? The dev said, yeah, sure, let's do it. And boom, it's not like GNOME invested resources developing a specific player for themselves when there were so many that already looked the part and did the job. Now, it won't stop distros from maybe either removing it or providing a full-on music manager. I don't know how many people still have a local music collection instead of using streaming, but there are still a lot of people that do that, presumably. So it's still nice to have that music manager pre-installed at some point. Now, if, like me, you think that AI is crap, well, you'll be happy to know that it's now invading VLC as well, because the developers are working on real-time AI-powered subtitling. This will all be done locally for more than 100 languages, and it can save those translations to an SRT file. It can translate and display two languages at once while you're watching the movie. So basically, you don't have to find those SRT files that are really well tailored to the specific video file that you have. VLC will just generate those subtitles for you. They announced this at CES. They didn't say when this would happen, but they do have a feature on their GitHub that uses Whisper for auto subtitles, and this seems marked for VLC 4. So unless they are working on two different AI translation features, this should happen decently soon. Someone on Twitter asked the VLC devs if they would consider using a cloud service instead of something local, and VLC said absolutely not. So at least they're committed to things being done on device, which is the right way of doing things. Although if it's based on Whisper, that's still OpenAI stuff, and that's definitely not ethically trained. So I still don't like this addition. As long as these tools keep ignoring the licenses, the copyright, and the attribution of everything they train on, I will still say that they're crap and refuse to use it. This is apparently what will be used in VLC unless they develop their own model and never talked about it. So I won't use it, and hopefully they don't start trying to do automatic AI dubbing, because after trying that feature just for fun on YouTube, I can safely say it's once again AI turning good, energetic, and nice, funny human content into garbage that is toneless, smooth, and uninteresting. So, AI. And let's conclude on some gaming stuff. The anti-sync driver will apparently finally arrive in the Linux kernel 6.14. As a reminder, this driver really does what fsync or esync do for Proton or Wine, but they do it at the kernel level, meaning it's not subject to the limitations of user space processes, and so it can access more resources and be scheduled differently. This should result in much better gaming performance on some tested titles. It can go from +21% FPS up to +678% if you compare it with upstream Wine. Compared to esync or fsync, it will be less of an improvement, but it should still make things a lot more reliable, and at least the frame timings should be much better. The driver should be available to everyone in March, provided your distro updates you, and provided the Proton or Wine build start using the driver instead of their own implementations of esync and fsync. I'm sure we'll see plenty of benchmarks comparing the current solutions to this new driver, and I'm sure we'll see that it's really a big leap in terms of performance, even compared to using normal Proton, GE Proton, or whatever else. And honestly, Linux gaming already performs really, really well, a lot better than Windows in a lot of games, so gaining even more FPS without having to do anything on our end is pretty nice. Okay, so this will conclude today's episode. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. As always, if you want to dive deeper into any of the topics I covered, all the links are in the show notes. And if you want to support the show, there are links to do just that, starting at €1 per month, or you can donate whatever you want to keep this show going. I always appreciate it. You can also find a link to our sponsor, which helps fund this entire show because it takes a lot of time to do. Thank you all for listening, and I guess you'll hear me in the next one next week. Bye!